Hi, this is Sherry. Who signed on, please?
Dave Jones from Milesen.
Thank you, Dave.
John from the FBI.
Thank you, John. Hi, this is Sherry. Who signed on, please?
Naomi Ulrich.
Thank you, Naomi.
Hi, Sherry. This is Erin.
Thank you, Erin. Hi, this is Sherry. Who signed on, please?
Hi, Sherry. This is Sean Kostelnik.
Thank you.
We have. What is the GIS work for you? Hi, Bruce and Scott.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm going to let these people say who they are, starting with
David Reed.
Bruce Richter with DHS.
John Rockwell.
Nate Skinner.
Greg Pat.
Travis Conant.
Dal.
Scott Nelson.
Also, all of these are known as the usual suspects.
Sturmo should be here.
Sturmo should be back in a minute. He was here a couple of minutes ago. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to catch you.
Okay.
Hi, this is Sherry. Did someone sign on the phone, please?
Yeah, this is Rick Williams, U.S. Army, Alaska.
Thank you, Rick.
So, Sherry, this is John Rockwell. I show 132. If you are ready and able, could we call roll, please?
I'm just catching up on names real quick.
Oh, thank you very much, Sherry.
Okay. On the telephone, I show myself, Sherry Schaefer, Mr. Jim Goodman, Mr. Mike Lawton, Mr. Dave Jones, Mr. John Kruna, Ms. Naomi Ulrich, Ms. Erin Kalwara, Mr. Sean Kostelnik, Mr. Rick Williams. Is there anybody else whose name I did not call who is on the phone? Okay, present in Anchorage. I show Mr. David Reed, Mr. Bruce Richter, Mr. John Rockwell, Mr. Nate Skinner, Mr. Greg Patz, Mr. Travis Conant, Mr. Del Smith, Mr. Scott Nelson, Mr. Scott Stormo. Is there anybody else present in Anchorage whose name I did not call?
No.
Okay, that completes the roll call.
Thank you very much, Sherry. So we'd like to call the meeting to order. Question number one, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Thank you again, Sherry. So at this time, are there any introduction of special guests or announcements? Hearing none, let's move to the previous meeting minutes. Hopefully everybody had a chance to read through the minutes. At this time, if there are no questions, comments, or updates, I would like a motion to approve.
This is Greg Patz, and I so motion.
Thank you, Greg. And a second, please.
Nate, sir.
Thank you, Nate. Since we heard no comments, meeting minutes are approved. Moving on to the issues and risk logs, I see no active issues. on the issues and risk log at this point. And the action items for open items. Sherry, do you want to give us a briefing on any action items that we have open?
There were no action items from the December meeting.
Sherry, thank you so very much. Next on the agenda would be Operations Management Office. Del, if you are able.
Yes.
If you take that up.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. USARAC battery plant rectifier issues. I know Mr. Williams is on the phone here, but my most recent information, unless you have something else, Rick, is that work would begin on January 21st, and that would take care of the situation of Birch Hill. Is that date correct, as far as you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the situation on Birch Hill didn't get that way overnight, and it's not going to get fixed in one project. But the first project, which will replace the DC power plant, is scheduled to begin the 21st.
Thank you very much.
There are follow-on, there are follow-on actions that I'll be performing now through April on all our sites with regard to power.
Okay, thank you. 7.17 upgrade. The last I had heard, they were still pending final sign-off by the state of Alaska on the contract. Is that still the situation, Scott?
It is, yeah. They haven't gone through the final closeout phase yet.
All right. But all of the work, as I understand it, is completed, correct? We're not pending anything that needs to get done before that?
Correct.
That's okay.
DOD need to sign it off as well, or is it just the state?
The contract's a little confused at the moment because it has motor bridge and which is not getting updated. So that's got to kind of get figured out before it can be closed. But the 717 work is for the most part done.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
Thank you. From
U.S. Army Alaska's perspective, that's just a punch list item. We still have to get the J-Bear moto bridge replaced with Wave, meeting with Motorola about that next week, and that is an active topic for discussion. So I expect that we'll have a resolution on that and a work date here by the end of the month.
Yeah, speaking of that, I see the Wave activity for up north is underway. I saw an email yesterday. Set on timeline, etc.
Yeah, I'm very interested on how that's progressing and what the final resolution is on how you're connecting to Wave and all that kind of stuff. So, if you could put a little tickler, maybe you could give us an update. Next one.
We've been joined by Mr. Woodall. Sherry?
Thank you.
And regarding Sean Kostolnik, you're the only motor guy I know on right now. I got next item here, Zone 2 outage from back in October. What do we know?
So this was further escalated to the product group on December 19th. They have since been working on that. The last update that I got was on January 5th. They had confirmed that the VMS lockup and identified that it could be the DAS. Forgive me if I'm using the wrong terminology. I'm trying to echo these technical terms. At that point, it was then escalated to the development team for further root cause analysis. So still no definitive explanation for why the outage occurred. However, it does seem like at least within the past 4 weeks, we've made some progress in root causing that.
Okay, thank you. My primary interest, and I'm sure Travis's is, and the user council, is that it did not happen again. So that's primarily the reason I keep harping on this. Mm-hmm. If we don't know why it happened.
Yeah, no, understood.
Okay, thank you. System security scan, RMF, Mr. Reed.
Morning. So I'm rolling into our scanning of the RNI this month for the entire network as well as the send devices. And I'll be heading up to Fort Wainwright here at the end of the month so I can get the send locations up there for the DOD and make sure those scans get taken care of. The RMF process is still on hold pending access to EMAS from the approving officials, and that's still going forward right now.
Okay. Any questions regarding that? Thank you. Console reboots. Monthly notices are sent out to all of the agencies with consoles from the help desk, and the reason they are requesting reboots to apply the most recent security patches. Agencies are not all rebooting their consoles, which is not a good thing if we're going to continue to protect the system. Off and on over the past year, I've talked to the help desk, and then I dialed up a few agencies, and they complied right away, but without prompting, they didn't seem to do that. It is possible for the SMO to remotely reboot consoles if the agencies do not comply with the ELMR policies. For lots of reasons, that doesn't sound like a real good idea. In the middle of some incident, I certainly would be interested in any input on how we motivate the agencies to do what it is to protect them as much as the system. So right now, it's sort of sporadic. I assume there's the regular folks that just do it, and then there's the others that say, oh, I couldn't get around to it, type thing. So anything that you guys as user council members talking to people out there can impress upon them the importance of doing those reboots. It does no good for all of those things to be downloaded to the system here if they don't reboot.
So,
yes, sir.
David, as far as looking at the scale of the issue, we've got 172 different clients that we track for patches on that. 32 of those clients haven't been rebooted since before October. And this is a case where, especially with the Windows patches, they're pushing out patches on a monthly basis. So they've got 3 months of patches. They're going to do a reboot, and they're still going to be behind by 2 months at least.
Okay. IC zone update. Nate, you got anything you want to share with the rest of the user council regarding the transition plan? I know it was going to be more complicated at one point in time, but does it seem so complicated since we've talked about it and the ability to have transition slowly with both on your, essentially on your radio. Is that still the situation?
Yes. Not done much in the last month with it, but we'll continue to work toward doing that.
And then we'll be discussing it with the Executive Council next week on the 15th, is that correct?
Yeah. Right. And I will. And then this is John. And then you'll are you still having your monthly meeting?
In general.
Okay. Yeah. We're gonna skip this one. Right.
Okay. December document reviews, security controls, review policy and procedure 200-6. Radio usage and transmission protocols, policy procedure 300-6. System account control policy procedure 400-4. System vulnerability management policy and procedure 400-6. Roles and responsibilities and system description. All of those were annual updates and reviews to make sure that they're still consistent with what we're trying to do. December system metrics. 1,065,188 group calls, 1,938,550 push-to-talks, and 508 busies. It went up a bunch, or a little, well, not a bunch. It went to 297 in November up to 508 in December. There was a increase of about 55,000 in push to talks, or excuse me, in group calls, so that would explain some of that increase. Okay, and in your packet today that was emailed out to you, there is an OMO 2019 Annual Information Assurance Audit Report. And it provides information to you regarding what we checked on over the past 12 months regarding the system and making sure it was right. Sherry, do they need to vote on that one or take any particular action, or is it just for their information?
excuse me. What we've done in the past is I'll send out an email after the meeting for each of the documents. For the IA report of findings, it's just an acceptance on their part. It's not a requirement that we do the report. We do it as a courtesy to them so they know what's going on as far as the IA portion of the system and what checks the OMO is making.
Okay, and then the next one would be the User Council 2019 Annual Assessment of System Operations and Management Performance, is basically how have Travis and I done over the past year with the system. So that will be sent out, as Sherry said, we'd like to review, and she will be looking for your vote. The business case require UC approval prior to going to the EC. This one has a particular timeline because we're next Thursday, we'll be meeting with the Executive Council. That's January 16th, so it's a week from today. If you're going to review the documents, please review that one first because that does have the timeline, so we can pass it on to the Executive Council on that date. And if you have any questions about any of these three documents when you're going over them, please get a hold of Sherry or me. DoD microwave hops. The state has been busily updating the microwave system for the past, I guess, roughly 6 months that I've been aware of, and they still have quite a ways to go. There are a number of DoD microwave hops that are still using the Harris Constellation. And then Kobe to Clear, I'm not sure what that is, but the state has moved to what, Travis, in the way of
the Aviat, right?
Mm-hmm. Aviat. We would recommend that the DoD, the responsibility for those microwave hops, whichever organization that is, I'm looking at Fort Greeley to Delta, Quarry to Birch Hill, which would be Air Force. I assume Quarry to Birch Hill. I don't know if they'd be on or not. Anyway, R1 North to Alcantara, and then Colby to Clear. Sometime back, I know that Travis sent an email to you, Rick, mentioning that that probably needed to be something you guys put in the queue to get taken care of. I just like to reiterate that the microwave conductivity is responsibility of the state of Alaska and their situation with all of their microwave hops. And it is, I could see that the others belonging to DoD would be their responsibility to get to the sites. So if it's not in your queue, it needs to be. I think Scott would be very pleased to be able to provide you with any information.
I'd be super pleased for Scott to provide you with information because, as it is right now, it's something that's that I wouldn't say it's on the queue. It's in a back burner somewhere. In order for it to go to a front burner, I'm going to need a lot of details on exactly what needs to be purchased and installed because I don't know, and it's going to have to be something the state of Alaska lives with. And it's part of your backbone infrastructure, even if I own the radio. So we're going to work together on this and come together for the big win, I think. But it's, I haven't requested any funding for it, and that's step one. I can't go to step one because I don't have a requirement.
Well, I obviously it goes without saying that the connectivity between the sites is critical to the system and making sure those sites are able to get back to the master site. So it's not a, and I know you're not saying that, Rick, it's not a nice to have, it's a must have. So if there's anything we can do in supporting your request to them, we'd be glad to do that.
Yeah, I'd say I'm on a lot of recommendation. Would love a statement of work if you guys have one sitting around. It would certainly speed things up, and then I can go ahead and get it out to bid, request the funding, and we'll go ahead and just get this thing knocked out like all the other stuff that we do. Right now, I know we need a microwave backbone, but I don't know much more than that because I'm a silly telecom guy and don't know much about radio infrastructure. I know that nominally the Army's the equipment owner, but that's not going to get a radio replaced. I need some help on that.
Yeah, Rick, this is Travis. The other portion of that, too, I think you guys have a separate contractor for microwave hops from Quarry Hill, Pole Hill, then Hill 3265. I believe it goes over to Donnelly Dome, too. But I think that's the same Harris equipment, so all those would be also need to be replaced to tie in those sites. But, yeah, we're willing to work with you and the state or whatever we need to do to try to get a statement of work for you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to ask my Air Force brothers to join me in this one because some of those facilities are Army owned and some of those facilities are Air Force owned, and sounds to me like we have a possibility of doing it as a single contract. If not, we can do it as multiple contracts. Doesn't really matter to me. A repair is a repair is a repair. But we probably would do better to work together as separately, at least to share our work. I love to plagiarize.
Okay, and while we're on the subject of spending your money, or the U.S. government's money, isolator issues at the sites, Harding Lake, Money Knob, Pegger Road, Quarry Hill, which is DOD's, and then Reindeer Hill, they're all the state sites. Travis and his crew, when they go to the sites, determine if the isolators are within tolerance, if that's the right word to use. And what I saw was if they're above two.
Yeah, 2 watts reflective.
They suggested that they be replaced. You can do some fine tuning, I think, correct?
Correct.
But if they can't, then they need to be replaced. And I know they've been working with the state and would be getting information. I don't know off the top of my head what that involves in the way of money. I suspect having anything to do with the system, it's not cheap. But that is another issue that needs to be addressed. I think most of these things are coming to pass since, to the best of my knowledge, and maybe Mr. Tim knows better than I since he was here, but about 2003, 2004, 2005, when a lot of this stuff went in. And you can see what 15 years has done to me. So you can imagine what it has done to those sites and things begin to fail. And it's an appropriate kind of thing to do. I mean, we can replace the GTRs on the DOD side. The state is working on getting their GTRs replaced. A plate refresh on a number of things is probably important. Even though they're checked on every year, when they start to go, there's a limited amount of backup supplies to replace those. So, whatever you can
follow up on that, Bill. So, okay. Just talking to Scott, we ordered 4 of the isolators for one of the sites here yesterday. So, we're going to start replacing those as we get them in. I think there's a 4-week lead time before we get them. But then once we get those back, we'll see. A lot of them we can retune on site when we do our PMs to see if we get them into tolerance. If not, we'll have enough spares for the state stuff. Then we can start changing those out when we need to. On the DOD, there's just was a couple channels at Quarry, and then I think 2 channels at Arlen North were the only ones out of tolerance.
And just so, in case anybody was wondering, hopefully not, Travis's folks, System Management Office, under the previously known as IOMS contract, have certain responsibilities that set out in the service level agreement and also in the contract that now exists with Motorola. I wouldn't know an isolator if it walked into the office, but a combiner, isolators, circulators, polyphasers, surge protection were all responsibility of the SOA and DOD at the site. It's part of the site infrastructure, not the RF equipment, which Travis's contract covers. So there are, if you sort of lost in your memory, on the service level agreement, it lists whose responsibility things are. So please take a look at it. If there's any doubt about it, give us a call. We can talk about it. But they are to take care of the RF equipment and make sure that's performing. Recently, there was a phone call when there was a heating issue at a site. It lost heat, correct? Lost heat. And the understanding of the person was, well, we have a contractor, I assume he was referring to BSIT that takes care of that. No, they do not. That is a heating and site infrastructure issue that needs to be addressed by the site owner in that particular case or any of these. So when these folks go out to the sites to do PMIs, I don't have Rich to do it anymore, but I'm sure they provide information back to the site owner if they see any issues that need to be addressed in a timely manner. So please, I have prepared just a memo for me to reiterate to the folks, the PLCs for the agencies, their responsibilities as differentiated from the BSIT Motorola folks.
And Dell, if I could add just a little bit to that, this just points out what a wonderful working relationship we have with both the SMO office, being, you know, the previous BSIT, and the OMO office. Part of it is proximity, being here, as well as just being that involved and proactive. And this just points out that when they see something, you know, bring it to our attention right away instead of some annual report that just gets buried. And we really appreciate that relationship.
And unless there are any questions that I've generated with all this battle, that's what I have for right now.
All right. Any questions for Dell?
Yeah, Dell.
Moving on.
Later.
Yeah. It's a upside down rectifier.
I will let Travis address that.
Speaking of Travis, we'll move on to the next bullet, the System Management Office overview.
All right. So, like, you got Arlen North interference under me. So a few weeks ago, we had a illegal carrier pop up on Channel 2, I believe, at Arlen North. And usually when we get that, it's caused by some type of interference on that receive frequency. So we went out and tested the site to see where the interference was coming from. And we were able to isolate it down to a building on base there. We weren't able to get access to the building, so we got a hold of the J-Bear folks. To see if we could get into that building. And during that time, we started losing several other channels caused by the interference. We ended up losing 8 of the 10 channels, so it totally took the site offline. I was able to call Tim, and he went straight down there and into the building and was able to track it down. And it was actually caused by a mobile radio. We've seen in the past where, like, one of the mobile radios will cause interference on one channel and knock that channel offline, but this was pretty broad. It ended up knocking down the whole site. But Tim found five mobile radios on the wall there, and he turned off each one, and, like, I think it was the third one, we saw all the levels come back up, the site restored, and all that. So real point of it is how important it is for you guys to test, auto-tune your radios annually, because they do cause this type of interference if they go unchecked.
Following up on that, my understanding is this particular radio was listed in the diagnostics report that was that's generated, the second one recently, and I sent out to everybody again. I think that originally was reported in July report. So it is important to, if you see it on there, to follow up and figure out what's going on with it. Hey, don't do this. As he said, completely knocked the site off because control channels are gone, so the other two that didn't get knocked off couldn't do anything anyway. So. Thank you.
And the other question about the isolator, what it is it isolates the transmit frequency on that side of that channel. So it tries to keep that frequency in there and doesn't allow all the other types of frequencies and stuff to go into the system. So once it starts getting more reflective power or out of tune, it'll start causing different types of interference and issues into the system. So they definitely need to be tuned and kept up to speed. So the other item I had was that we're going to be meeting Jason with Ewarn and one of the State of Alaska guys out at Cottonwood tomorrow, just to do a site walk for the new 700 system that they're looking at putting in there. So we'll be getting all the information for Jason, so he'll be ready to install that. Last I heard, Jason didn't have a date set on his schedule, but they were looking at the end of January when they were going to install that new site.
Yeah, I talked to Jason just a little while ago, as a matter of fact, because we're going to do a CR change request, as it is a modification to some degree of the system. And I was, as you probably know, it has a rationale of why you want to do this. And he said they're getting an awful lot of joint operations going on between state troopers and others out in the valley with Wasilla PD, and they were looking for better building penetration as a reason, they said, they wanted to go with a 700. I'm not entirely sure that that will be the case, but there is a couple of BDAs that went out of there to provide better coverage at the hospital and at the Walmart. And the third one went into a fire station that didn't need it. But that's what's the rationale for going with 700 out there. I understood a couple of times that somebody basically thought they were different systems. They are not. And there's an extensive amount of interoperability between people with 700 radios, the top groups on ALMR now. So, anyway, digress.
Thank you, Del. Was that it, Travis?
Yeah, that's all I have.
Any questions for Travis or the OMO office?
Is there any feedback on the Harris testing of the radios?
We have not heard back from them since they canceled the last one. If you haven't heard anything, you
know.
So, Greg, is this regarding the, I just forgot the numbers, the 175 to the 200?
Yeah, it's 200 XL.
Right, the XL 200.
185 XL.
185, thank you, Dan, for the update. Yeah, I concur that it seems like they have decided to wait until they can be more confident that they can pass the certification test. There is one, and I forget what it is. If someone remembers, please update us, that had a wait time that they knew that they had to go back to programming for that.
Yeah, it was something to do with multi-groups. Something to do with wait time on multi-groups.
Wait time on multi-groups.
Revert, right? Or revert to multi-groups.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And so at this point, they haven't even given us an approximate date like June or what have you that they would like to come back. We definitely, you know, the invitation's open for them to come back and test their radios and see if we can get them on the system.
Yeah, they must have substantially changed something in our software because I look back to see if there was a revert issue on any of them before. 25 and the 75, it was not. The XL100 never did pass, so they've discontinued that one.
Right.
Obviously, the 185 and the 200 must have a substantially different one because they were very concerned that they wouldn't be able to meet that.
Any other questions for Travis? If not, moving on. State of Alaska and Department of Defense. Scott, since you're still here, would you like to kick it off?
Just microwave-wise, we are, as you've heard before, we're putting in 55 hops. We're about a third of the way through that process, so you're going to continue to see notifications from the help desk for outages occurring as we're doing that and doing the MPLS network upgrades at sites throughout the state. Sometimes those can be done without taking down any LMR site. Sometimes, depending on what you're doing, it could be a reboot of a network equipment that's going to take it down for a few minutes. And as things always go, sometimes you didn't have any idea you were going to cause an outage, and you do in the process. So we appreciate everybody's patience as you have to deal with calls from the help desk asking for outage windows at short notice, because much of this stuff is done when we get the chance for weather or the ability to get to a site for convenience in many cases. So it's not something we can stick into a routine 4 o'clock in the morning kind of outage window to do it. So Tim may say something more about this, but on and off over the last year, I think the DOD and the state have kind of talked about how do we SATs exist to take care of the state side of the infrastructure. I'm not sure that the DOD necessarily has something in place that a SATs-like organization that takes care of all of their infrastructure items, where we're in a lot of the same places, because obviously we might have microwave running through it even at a DOD site. We might have monitoring equipment in there or AMR guys have monitoring equipment in there that tells us it's hot, it's cold, its battery's not working, lost power, and a generator didn't start. I would not expect that the DOD is ever going to have somebody that's looking at that kind of stuff. I would think we'd want to rely on either the SAS guys or the AMR guys or Motorola, which we pay to monitor 24/7, to notify that. I think what we probably need to get together and try to figure out is who do you call based on what site it is to start with. And I think Tim and I have chatted in the past that I can understand how that the military side of this is more complicated because you don't have a SATS organization that in theory is, although it turns over people, is going to exist for a while. You got military people that might turn over every 6 months to 2 years, and they have to kind of refigure out what their roles and responsibilities are for the LMR site. That often, as we find out, they believe it's all under contract until some of them get informed that no, we're not chopping down all the trees that are growing up into your LMR. That's your role to take. So I think there's got to be a way that we can get together and figure out how the state and the DOD can make this work better for the long term for both the DOD and the state, for the entire program, which is, as we all know, supports way more than just those two customers. So I'm more than happy to have those conversations. I assume if we can get the right people together on the DOD side, we can work together to try to come up with a good plan to try to make it easier in the future to know when battery plants need to be changed and how's that going to happen, or it's hot or cold, who gets called at whatever time of
Did we lose Tudor Road?
Sounds like we did.
Let me send a note to Dell. Hopefully they'll see that and get back on.
I thought somebody didn't pay the phone bill.
Last time that the government announced the budget, that partially funded some stuff, so you know, we'll remain in
hi,
go ahead.
Hi, John. Yeah,
yes,
we
ma'am.
Lost you guys momentarily, so if I'm not sure if you moved on with the agenda or not. The last thing I heard was Scott talking about working together to come up with a plan, and then we lost you guys.
Right. Scott was still discussing that plan when you came back online. And he just reiterated the fact that we'll, after or outside of this meeting, that we'll get the state of Alaska and DOD together to continue to work on that planning phase for, you know, equipment failures and ownership and things like that for the infrastructure. And so then Scott was just finishing up by saying, that's all I've got unless you want to talk about budget, which, as you know, the governor did submit the his initial budget. And the revised budget will be out on the 13th of February, I believe, to see if there's any changes to that as we move forward with that process. So, any other questions for Scott? All right, well, Tim, if you want to continue on with a DOD update.
I agree with Scott. We certainly need to do that. But in addition to addressing that issue, Scott and I have had conversations on and off over the past year or so concerning the invoicing process between through Motorola to the state to DOD and that payment process. We believe that we need to, in the next couple of months, bring together the right people from the state and the DOD, mostly financial management, FM, resource management type personnel that would be making these payments, and the people that approve those invoices, and agree on a process and timeline for how those are to be processed, when payments are going to be made, whether they're going to be monthly, whether it's going to be quarterly, whether it's going to be a one-time shot at the beginning of the year. But we need to establish an agreement or a process to do that because we have a variation of invoices being paid and not paid. We've passed state fiscal years, in which funding from a previous fiscal year is still outstanding. The same thing with regard to federal fiscal year. That's something we really need to resolve. With regard to equipment ownership and responsibility, we do have a service level agreement prior to 2016, when we did the previous contract, well, under the previous contract, the BSIT was responsible as part of that contract to identify infrastructure requirements and provide technical solutions. That was a part of the statement of work, was in their customer service plan, but that was not a process that was renewed when the contract was awarded to is. So before BSIT was the prime and Motorola was the secondary on this, and now Motorola is the prime and Visa is the secondary. But in our contract language, we didn't put in the requirement for the contractor to be the QC, perform the quality control, the performance checks on all of the equipment, whether it was on the contract for maintenance or not, if it was a rectifier, if it was a battery, whatever it was, antenna couplers. I mean, if they were up on the tower and they saw that they were supposed to identify that and provide a technical solution cost estimate for that. We lost that capability when we moved contracts. We didn't bring it forward. So I think part of that conversation will be how do we identify that. I think it won't be that difficult. I think there's plenty of records out there, as-built records that identify what equipment belongs to who and when. And so what we probably need to do is expand the service level agreement to identify those specific responsibilities and pieces of equipment and then the responsibility to maintain and sustain them at a specific level. And then maybe understand in the state scope of work and their contract is that expectation that we can ask the system management office or Motorola to make notification to us or to look for those sorts of things and help in identifying it in a when they do PMIs, because I don't know that we. I don't know that our site owners have the ability to go out and look at these sites and have all the expertise to ascertain whether that equipment's at a standard it needs to be at. They really rely on someone else to do that. But we certainly want to have a process where we're, because of our funding processes, we don't have a pot of money that sits around that we can just go grab and do these things. So usually when stuff like this comes up, it's an unfunded requirement. And unfunded requirements take a little bit of processing to get the money to fix. So from a life cycle standpoint, it would be helpful that we also come up with an evaluation, a life cycle evaluation that says we need to look at target a year that we need to replace this equipment in the future. Mm-hmm. And then we can budget for it or make it part of an upgrade funding requirement, I think is the other process. With regard to the next upgrade, working with the Army and the Air Force, and again, Army, not here locally, but Army at a higher level and the Air Force, at a higher major command level, and confirming with them the cost for the upgrade based on what Motorola has provided us. We're asking Motorola for updates, but we understand that should the state not be able to complete its Quantar upgrade, that our ability to go to the next system technology level may be significantly delayed, or depending on their thought process with going forward with that, our sustainment of the system in a risk management framework certified status is at risk. Because of that risk, we got General Bussier to send a letter to the governor asking the governor letting the governor know that we thought it was important that the state fund the Quantar upgrade, the $44 million required. But one of the things we did ask the governor to do was to get back with us as soon as possible, and notify us whether the state was going to be able to move forward with that funding, because we would have some significant funding and programmatic decisions that we would have to make. And because of the potential cost of those programmatic decisions that we would have to make, the ability to get those funds in short term were highly unlikely. Our ability to sustain operations really comes down to whether Motorola is willing to continue to do critical patching beyond the 30 November 2020 timeline. So we've asked them to come to the Executive Council. We've asked Motorola to provide a presentation at the next Executive Council meeting, providing us with providing the Executive Council with kind of their potential solutions, courses of action that could be taken to keep the system in a certified status, and whether they can or not. But we need to know that. In other words, can we buy another year from them? Can we pay for them to continue to run the 7.17 system for another year and do patches? Will they, again, we need to understand that, and then we need to look at the, then we need an answer from the state from the, with regard to where they, when they believe that their funding health will be good, and that will help us make a decision as to how we will have to move forward, because we, our ability to operate outside of the risk management framework certification requirements is constrained. We can attempt to get waivers, we can attempt to do certain things, and we can delay it for a certain period of time, but at some point, if we're not able to sustain that, we would have to move out of the ALMR partnership and into a autonomous type operation again, which we don't want to do. But because the amount of money it would take to do that and the time frame it would take to do that, we need to know sooner than later because of the processes we'll need to go through in terms of identifying the funding shortfalls, the unfunded requirements, trying to obtain waivers, trying to sustain use of the current system and spectrum, because a lot of cascading effects occur here. If we are no longer in a partnership, the NTIA and the FCC may or may not honor our spectrum sharing cooperative approach that we have. There's a lot of unknowns that could create a lot of devastating issues that we need to start working. So from a contingency standpoint, that is something that we'll be hitting hard. We don't want to raise a flag and create, we don't want anyone to walk away from the user council today believing that that's the course of action that we're taking. We're not moving away. What we're trying to do is do the proper programmatic planning and have courses of action identified, risk impact, and cost laid out for leadership so that we can provide those briefings and get ways ahead concurred upon. So, again, I don't wish for anybody to run away with that the ALMR partnership is on fire. It is not. We're just doing the prudent programmatic type planning that should we not get where we need to be, we have a plan in place to get where we need to be.
And Tim, this is John Rockwell. Thank you very much for bringing that issue up in the meeting today. as one, you know, system owner, and the risk of being outside of the security framework. We all agree that it's very important that we maintain a sustainable system. And you also point out that this is not just DoD system or State of Alaska or what have you. We have 126 different agencies representing here at the table with over 23,000, you know, subscribers connected. So this is very important for us to maintain the system in a supportable level. And I appreciate you, you know, bringing up that perspective. I will say that from the State of Alaska's perspective, specifically the Department of Public Safety, and I even had a meeting with the Department of DMVA, Military Veterans and Affairs, that we are very aggressively pursuing the funding for upgrading the Quantars. You know, we're pushing the governor's office hard, so I think you'll find that you have a lot of people joining that parade when it comes to making sure that the system is upgraded. And I invite anybody on the phone to join us with this effort. Any questions for Tim or DOD? Hearing none, next agenda item is new business. Do we have any new business to address? Are you done? Sorry. I actually didn't ask Tim if it was done. I'm sorry.
I'm done.
Okay. not hearing any new business. The next meeting is scheduled February 5th and March 4th. Going around the table once, is there anything anybody wants to bring up to the group? Yeah. Bruce Richter?
Bruce Richter from DHS. So not so much new business for the group, just awareness for the group. Tuesday, FEMA Region 10 is updating the communications annex, the Alaska Response Plan. And after our last earthquake about a year ago, we were lucky we still had natural gas, we still had electricity, still had cell service, we still had internet service, undersea cables are still there. You can imagine some higher scale event where that might not be the case. And should Alaska be in a state where we're looking for flow of outside support and flow of outside resources, this plan is a mechanism for kind of pre-identifying some of those needs and trying to triage them. And they can do a much better job with state and local involvement than they can with a bunch of guys from D.C. and Seattle kind of throwing darts at the dartboard. So that's the purpose of this meeting, and it's certainly open to anybody interested. I believe there'll be a teleconference bridge as well. But my commitment is I'll take that draft or the upgraded annex and circulate it back through Sherry to get up to this group so we can get your eyes on it. Try to make it the most useful product for some future event that I hope I'm dead and gone before it ever happens. But so that effort's going on. The other, I was down in Olympia, Washington, listening to Anton Dam, Washington DNR, make a presentation last month, and he turned out a little bit of danger on his experience at Washington DNR working with FirstNet, getting called out to fire scenes. And it turns out they mentioned in his bullet list, he mentioned something to do with the Swan Lake fire in 2019 down by Soldotna. And I don't know any of the details on that. His short note says that they use First Note to expedite a phone purchase through local AT&T vendor. I don't know any more of the details. But I will tell you, I'm not selling AT&T. I'm not selling FirstNet. The government issued me an AT&T phone, so that's what I have. And just in November, I switched it over to the FirstNet Black SIM card. Just sitting here in this meeting today, I used the FCC speed test app and ran a speed test. And from your table right here, I'm getting 147 megabyte per second download speed and a 15 megabyte per second upload speed, which to me is stunning on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. So where you're lucky enough to be under coverage and bear umbrella and where you're lucky enough to be near a band 14 foot tower,
got some pretty cool functionality. And Anton's point was your whole agency doesn't need to be a customer. You just need that one person at your agency that is a customer to reach out for some of their deployable support should be needed.
Thanks, Bruce. And I know that we had a few incidents this last summer where FirstNet stepped up and brought a deployable. They never got any direct information from the users to the usefulness of it, but I did see a lot of the press, I want to say.
They're good about writing press releases.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But, anyway, I'm just telling you what, he's not selling their service either. He's just a customer trying to put out forest fires. And he was just sharing some of his lessons learned and some of his experiences. And the other kind of cool thing is we live in a competitive world, and you're seeing the other color of vendors out there step up their game as well and looking for opportunities to support public safety. So take advantage of it.
All right. Anything else, Bruce?
If you're ever interested in doing a state communications interoperability plan update, we've been able to do it successfully by webinars only and not making people drive long distances in Oregon and Washington. And so if Alaska decides they want to go down that path, that's an option.
Thank you very much. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? If done, I would love to hear a motion to adjourn. Nate Skinner, thank you very much for the motion. And who was that that seconded on the phone?
Fournier.
Thank you so very much, Fournier. All right, we're adjourned.